All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a chief warrant officer, second grade, I guess you could call it, helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. We want to welcome you to Veterans Radio today. It's got a great program lined up for you, and you are going to be the participants. We're going to be talking about the monuments and the changing of the names of the military bases. So we want you to get in on the conversation. The local number is going to be 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. This is a chance to get whatever is bothering you about this particular event or events. You can voice them here with nobody telling you they can't say those things, because we're going to talk about them. I've got a couple of interviews pre-recorded that we, my partner Jim Falsone did with, the director of the museum, of the World War I Museum, and also with the major historian for the World War II Museum. So we're going to be listening to those pre-recorded interviews later on during the program, just to kind of motivate you a little bit so that you can participate in the discussion. It's really important. I think this is something that especially veterans should voice their opinions about. It's just something that I think that we have to really explore. And in the pre-recorded interviews, we talked with these folks, historians, about it. And, you know, we've got to look at our history as Bob Satino said, you know, warts and all, everything that goes on in there. Because if we don't pay attention to the bad side, if you want to call it that, then we are bound to not necessarily repeat it, but the history is going to be changed over the next 100 years or so, and people won't even know what really did happen. So please, again, write down the phone number, 734-822-1600, so that we can get you on the air and hear what you've got to say about this important issue. I did want to make sure that we thank our sponsors. We can't do this program without sponsors, obviously, so I want to make sure we thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. For more information, you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com, or give them a call at 800-693-4800. U.S. Wings, a manufacturer of the finest leather flight jackets in the world. U.S. Wings is a major supplier of leather flight jackets to the military. They are also making masks these days, kind of diversifying in their uniform equipment, things that they have to do to keep it going. So you could also get some really specialized masks that they're offering. So for more information on that, you can go to uswings.com. That's uswings.com, or give them a call at 800-650-0659. We also want to thank our local veteran service organizations, all of them here in the local Ann Arbor area. We couldn't do the program without your help, your input, and also your stories. So that's going to be the American Legion Post 46, VFW Post 423, and the Vietnam Veterans of America Post 310, the Charles S. Kettles VVA Post 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan. We want to thank you, too. A couple of corporations have contacted us, and we're really excited to bring you more information about these groups. Number one is the support of the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as the NVBDC. And this organization is really important for all of you veteran business owners out there, because in order to do business with the federal government and with many corporations, you need to be certified as a, quote, veteran-owned business. And so that's their main purpose, to certify that a veteran-owned business is just that, veteran-owned. It's important for veteran-owned companies that want to do business with the government and veteran-friendly corporations. So for more information, you can give them a call. That's the NVBDC. The number is 888-237-8434. Or you can go to their website. That's nvbdc.org, nvbdc.org. And then finally, and this is really important, I think, is we want to talk just briefly about the Eisenhower Center. And the Eisenhower Center is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the Eisenhower Center specializes in treating mainly traumatic brain injury patients. It's a residential program. I mean, they have outpatient as well, but it's a residential program here in Ann Arbor. And they've got a special After the Impact program that provides rehab for veterans, first responders, and professional athletes through an intensive 30 to 90 day evidence-based treatment program. Participants recovering from concussion, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, and suspected CTEs are immersed in an intensive transitional treatment program to treat multiple deficit areas. At the Eisenhower Center, and there are two of them, you can contact them at theeisenhowercenter.com, and they've got facilities in Michigan and also in Florida. So that's eisenhowercenter.com. These are great people. We've had them on the program. If you go to veteransradio.net and go into our, you know, just type in Eisenhower Center, you can see the programs that we've done utilizing them in the past. Great organization. There's an awful lot of obviously great organizations out there that are designed to help veterans. I got to get into my chat room here and see what's happening. Okay, Ed, just hold on for just a minute. I want to play a little interview that my partner Jim Fausone did with Bob Cetino. And Bob Cetino used to be or was a history professor at Eastern Michigan University, which is just down the block from our station. Currently, he is a senior historian at the World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. And he did an interview with Jim Fausone. And at the end of the interview about the museum, Jim asked him about the memorials and the statues. And so I want to play that little segment, and then we'll get back to Ed. So, Derek, if you would play that right now.
And before I let you go, I guess I want to ask a historian. There's a lot of...
this ought to be good.
Yeah, yeah. This is.
I'm ready, man.
There's been a lot of controversy in the country at the moment about the role that war memorials or memorials to certain... generals and others should play in society. How do you look at that controversy that's currently going on?
Yeah, so well, we've had to look at it here in New Orleans. I know there's currently a movement to take down statues, and some are being taken down by regular process, and some are being dragged down. But you know, we had a big statue to Robert E. Lee right near the museum on a big tall pillar overlooking the city in so-called Lee Circle. But, you know, our mayor at the time, it was Mitch Landrieu, decided that, you know, the monument to a Confederate general just had no place in a modern city that, you know, had a majority African-American population. And, you know, they took down that statue. There's still a naked pillar, and there's a debate where Lee stood. There's a debate over who they should put up there. I hear suggestions of Louis Armstrong, great musician, Leah Chase, great restaurateur down here in New Orleans. You know that this is a city that's famous for a lot of things, but many of them involve music and food. So maybe there is some sense to that. But, you know, I mean, I think in a broader sense, Jim, when I look at this movement right now, particularly as it affects war memorials, you know, times change. What was acceptable to one generation might not be acceptable to another generation. I get that. The other argument is you're just erasing history. Why don't you just leave it there and use it as a teaching tool? If you think it has a negative implication, you know, you're never going to be able to teach that negative implication again. But I think in the larger sense, what this proves to me is how false it is when Americans of all sorts, and you've heard them say this, say no one cares about history anymore. You can't get anyone interested in history anymore. Americans today are profoundly and deeply interested in their own history. And I think that's the good news coming out of all the troubles, I guess, that we're seeing, the troubled mood of the nation at once. You know, people will compromise over almost anything, but apparently not over their views of history. And I think that's the issue we're kind of trying to work our way through right now.
Well, I do think we have to work our way through it. And maybe a little bit of this is we don't teach enough history, or we haven't taught history the right way. And this time of troubles, as you mentioned, will give us an opportunity to reevaluate the importance of teaching history and teaching all and every aspect of the history of a particular event or events.
And that's a good point. I mean, I think one of the lessons of teaching history is that it's got to be warts and all. If you're not looking at some of the negative impacts of your past development, look, you all know on the individual level, we've all had moments in our life, some we're really proud of, and some we say, boy, I didn't handle that well. Well, that's true of larger communities as well, and it's probably, I would say, true of nations. So any history has to be taught, warts and all. I don't think anybody should ever argue for kind of prettying up or tidying up your own history. And again, I just think it's the argument about what some of those parts of American history are that's really generating some of this action in the streets today.
Well, in this conversation you and I are having, it makes me think that part of our problem is we've said to our teachers, well, you only get 3 days to talk about World War II.
And
it's hard to do warts and all when you have to cover such an extensive topic. And so maybe all you end up doing is hitting the highlights, and the highlights seem to gloss over it. And we miss that opportunity to evaluate it from all angles, possibly.
I would say one thing. Teachers, grade school, elementary, and then middle school, and then secondary, and all the way up to the ranks of the professoriate in college, they get a bad rap. I was a professor for a little over 30 years of my career before I came to the museum. And I have a lot of friends who teach high school, have a lot of friends who teach grade school, and they're some of the hardest working people you're ever going to meet in your life. And you're quite right. They're often given a kind of impossible task. We got so much of this to do. You got to do this. State mandates you to do that. But they do a good job, and they do it honorably and to the best of their ability. And I just, I'd be remiss right now if in this discussion of how we teach history, I would never want to make it seem as if somehow I'm blaming teachers, because I think they're some of the hardest working and greatest Americans alive today.
No, I agree. I'm not. What I'm suggesting is that our construct is you have such a limited period of time, teacher, this is all you can do. And I think maybe we have done society a disservice by taking a real discussion of history or the Civil War and compressing it down to something that were all you can really do in the time available, because you should at least know Abraham Lincoln was involved in the Civil War. That's all I've got time for.
And it would also, but you know what, it would help if you know that Ulysses S. Grant was on the side of the Union.
Okay, that was Robert Satano, who is the senior historian at the World War II Museum and also our partner here at Veterans Radio, Jim Falzone. You can go to veteransradio.net and hear that entire interview all about the World War II Museum coming up, I think at the end of the month or into August. I'll find out more about that for you. I wanted to have the opportunity to just briefly mention that I had hit this interview on because this is a historian who's looking at what we are trying to either erase or change or edit or whatever you want to call it to our history. And I'm sure that we're going to get some responses from people. And I want to make sure that I give out that number again. Ed, don't go away. I'm going to get you in just a second. That number is 734-822-1600. All right, we do have a call coming in from Ed in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And so, Ed, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, sir. I've had an opinion, but it wasn't based on the interview you just played. And it was more, I thought the discussion was going to be more about base closing, not base closings, but base renamings. And
we're getting it. That's part of it. The statue and the bases. So go ahead.
Well, I'm a guy. I'm pretty right wing conservative, and because the left wants to do it, I don't want to do it. But when I think about it philosophically, if a base is named after a general from a country that attacked the United States, which would be the Southern Confederate States of America. Well, then, and particularly if they were fighting to support slavery, then I could see the sensitivity of some people. And yet, a lot of this stuff is just politically motivated. It really isn't emotionally motivated. Some of it's just downright stupid. Like, who was it? What's his name? Bedford. He became, although he was Confederate general, he became a friend of blacks, and yet that gets totally ignored. You know what I mean? And all the hubbub, all the generation of excitement to stir stuff up.
Well, I have a tendency to agree with you on that, Ed. I think if we do, all of us step back and think about these things, that, you know, some of these, I was looking into the history. I was looking into the history of these military bases and when they were, you know, when they were named, and the majority of them were named right about the beginning of World War One, and the president at the time was Woodrow Wilson, and I didn't realize this until I had studied it in history. And he was not a friend of the North, especially. I mean, he's from Virginia, and he was quite the racist president when you read his articles and so forth. And so he was kind of the guy that decided that they were going to name these bases after these Confederate generals. And I think I just got an email from someone that there's an article in Atlantic Magazine that said, you know, maybe we should go back every 50 years or so and decide whether we want to keep these names or keep these statues, because the world does change. And, you know, a little bit more, as the interview went to, was the idea, if we know a little bit more about our history, then maybe we can do something about it.
Well,
and go ahead.
Well, Arlington was Robert E. Lee's farm, wasn't it?
He got that from his wife. And, we kind of changed that around, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, we did.
We're going to rename Arlington, but then I wasn't career military. I got 4 years and I was out, and I'm happy to have served. I just wondered, some of you guys who are career, do you look at that as like, oh, they're trying to rename my alma mater or something? I don't really have an attachment to base names. You know, it's just a place I was at, you know?
I agree with that. I was talking with somebody the other day about this, and, you know, I was at Fort Polk, Louisiana, which was a Confederate general. I was at Fort Rucker, Alabama, which is a Confederate general. I was at Fort Walters, Texas. I don't know who that was named after. But,
the majority of the bases were named after Confederate generals.
And, I mean, if we looked at it logically and, as you say, without the emotion involved, then maybe we should – maybe we should think about changing some of these names to something more appropriate. And I think maybe we'll get into that in the second half of the program when we start looking for solutions. Ed, I want to thank you very much for giving us a call. What branch of the service were you in, and when did you serve?
Well, I wasn't in the military. I was in the Air Force.
I've heard of them.
From 72 to 76, I was in communications.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your service, Ed. Thank you very much, and welcome home.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. We're going to take a real quick break here. I'm reminding everybody out there, give us a call, please, 734-822-1600. We want to know what you think about this whole thing, and we will go from there. But right now we're going to take a real quick break for a commercial from Legal Help, and then we'll come back and take some more of your calls. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Dirk Spelling.
This is Eric Pasley.
This is Trace Atkins.
We're Little Big Town.
The Rascal Flatts.
Hey, this is Jake Owen.
This is Florida Georgia Line.
Hi, my name is Justin Moore. Right now, during this COVID-19 crisis, Fisher House is keeping families connected by providing Facebook portal TV stations to VA hospitals and converted to become homes away from home for VA healthcare workers. Want to find out more? Go to fisherhouse.org.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we wanted to talk to you today about these monuments and the military bases, and that people are trying to figure out what to do with them. And as our first caller said, you know, emotionally, I'm not really tied to the names of the bases and that type of thing. And some of the statues that are being torn down, you know, I'd like to know what the history of those statues are before we start taking them down. You know, and some people have suggested that we put up, explanations of who these particular generals were in the case of the statues, or the name of the particular military installation that you were in, so we'd know a little bit about it. I didn't have any idea when I went into the service, probably like many of you did 40, 50 years ago, or even more current, who these generals were. But in doing a little bit of research for today's program, I was really kind of surprised that almost every single military base, especially in the South, is named after a Confederate general. And then, you know, if we look at it from a legal standpoint, they lost. And it's not that I'm not saying that, you know, that we all kind of admired the Southern, you know, the cause of the South or the Confederate fight and so on and so forth. I think so, but once we learned about it, and I'm hoping that somebody doesn't like this comment, but the idea is that these guys wanted to break away from the United States of America. And, in most cases, that's what would be considered a traitorous act. And there are songs out there that where they, I was trying to think of one of the songs that I couldn't find to play, but the lyrics of the song were something to the effect of, you know, to take down the stars and stripes and raise up the bars of the Confederate flag. And I have to let you know that my relatives on my father's side were from Tennessee. And so being a member of the Confederacy was important to that family for a long time. I had a great-grandfather that fought in the Civil War for the South. I don't think he really understood what they were fighting for, but he was captured and was offered the option of going to a prisoner of war camp or taking the pledge to the United States and going home. And he said, I'm with you guys, because he didn't have any he had no slaves. He was a kind of a poor dirt farmer. Ended up running a general store down in a small town called Normandy, Tennessee, which is just south of Murfreesboro, where there were a number of battles. But I think it's important that we look at the rise. I should get another historian on to talk about the change in what occurred in the South after the war was over. We've got a caller on the line. His name is John. John is calling from Wyandotte, Michigan. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Actually, Joe.
Hi, Joe. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Yeah, I wanted to expound on what Ed was saying. Because, I mean, Robert E. Lee himself was anti-slavery. Not everybody that fought for the South fought for slavery. Granted, as a state right issue, slavery was first and foremost in most people's minds, but the states created the federal government, not the other way around. They freely joined the Union, and they should have and constitutionally did have the right to freely leave the Union. So when people think of it, not everybody that thinks of the Confederate flag immediately thinks slavery. They think states' rights, which has been eroded, and that's become a symbol for that. So a lot of these generals and that were bases named after them because of their military prowess, not because they were fighting for slavery.
Well, that is true. I think that, as you mentioned, that they were fighting for the idea of states' rights, that the states had the right to determine their own destiny, for lack of a better word there. And I think one of the things that I can remember from studying history is that Robert E. Lee didn't want any statues dedicated to him at the end of the Civil War.
That wouldn't be too surprising. I think he was really kind of a humble man. And again, him and a few others really opposed slavery. That's not what they were fighting for. And like Ed was saying, we just don't teach history. They don't want to know. They don't care to know. They just want to make it all about, like the saying goes with communists, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. Facts don't matter.
Well, I I have a tendency to agree with you on a lot of that, Joe, but I think the other parts is that we don't teach history the way that we should. We don't have enough time to teach it.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at, 230, 240 years of history. When I was in school back in the late 50s, early 60s, we barely got to World War II. And, now we've had, another 50 years worth of history to cram into there. And, we're shorting everything out. And I think that's what Dr. Satano was talking about, is that we're giving them the Reader's Digest version of history,
right?
instead of going in and showing them the whole nuances thing.
They're just giving them the highlights, like you said.
If we only have the highlights, most of the time we're going to try and pick the good parts, not necessarily the bad parts.
Right. Well, nowadays they seem to only want to focus on the bad parts, and that's our biggest problem now in the schools. But all right, thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, thanks, Joe, very much for calling Veterans Radio. I'd like to have your comments out there. The number is 734-822-1600. We're really interested in seeing how you feel about, should we replace these monuments? Should we take them down? Should we take them down legally? We don't want the people going out there and knocking them down. People are starting to go after statues of the, I don't know, can't say the wrong people, but somebody tried to take down the statue for U.S. Grant, who happened to be not only the president of the United States after the Civil War, but also the general that finally won the war. So, this guy could, you're not going to have more of a Union northern general than Ulysses S. Grant. And it seems like when people were writing history about him that they focused a lot on the negative. We complain a lot about social media today, but the press itself, and casting aspersions on journalists, I don't mean to do that because it's a hard job. I don't think I would want to have it. But they went after Grant during the Civil War for things that had occurred, early on in his lifetime. And I think that was, a mistake. The idea of honoring some of these, as we talked about earlier, some of the generals, no matter what their political beliefs were, they fought for the wrong. In this case, many, many people feel that they fought for the wrong side. And we did glorify that. And we have lots of things going on out there. I wanted to ask again the question out there for anybody who is listening. Give us a call here at 734-822-1600. What do you think? Should we have these statues of all these Confederate generals out there, and should we take them down? Should we move them? Should we put them in a museum? Should we set up, what did the president say, a monument park where all of these statues can be moved? I don't know. I'm asking your opinion. I've got my own, but I'm very curious as to what you think about those things. So if we're going to take, I'm not going to take another break, but I am going to play a second interview now. And this interview is Dr. Matthew Naylor, and he is the CEO of the World War I Museum and Memorial in Kansas City. And he's going to be talking about why it is important that we have these museums and monuments and so forth. So, Derek, if you could play that interview, it'd be greatly appreciated.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Dr. Matthew Naylor. He is the president and CEO of the National World War I Museum and Memorial in Kansas City, Missouri. Dr. Naylor, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be joining you.
In a question about relevancy, I think there's some folks who might wonder, why is a World War I museum and memorial still relevant today?
And I think that's a critical question to be asking, and a perfectly reasonable one, especially because an institution like this invites people to be philanthropically engaged with us. So we ought to be able to, as it were, make our case. I think that the core reason is the saying that says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. It's so important that we understand the conditions that led to and caused World War One and the great unraveling of the world, that we fully understand what happened, and then what happened post-war, the mistakes that were made, the things that were done right, both looking, leading to, and coming from, helps us understand how it is that we can work toward a sustainable peace in today's world. And so it's not just about, you know, the pretty stories of the past. It's not about romanticizing the past. It seems to me that museums like ours are able to help us understand the past in order to create the future that we would all yearn for. And that's why our place is so important as a cultural institution. History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes, so we better understand what the history was so as to ensure that the tune that we play in the future is the one that we want.
No, well said, Dr. Naylor, and I do think at times we don't know our history, and as a result, we're acting on things without really understanding them. And you know, we're at a time in our country where some portion of the population is either pulling down or demanding the removal of war memorials and statutes and other things for generals. In a historical museum that you have, in a war memorial that you're charged with protecting, how do you explain to people that not only is this relevant, but it has to be maintained for the future as compared to pulling it down or locking its doors?
Yeah. I think that one of the things that we seek to do is tell story in context. And so when history is told in context, then we're able to more fully understand the nuances and the complexities of historical characters and the part they played in our instance, in war or in global conflict. When history is pulled out and placed out of context, often it can take on it meaning or significance which shifts people's more comprehensive or full understanding. And so the strength that a museum and memorial is able to bring to discussions such as you've described is context. So you know, one of the things that we would seek to do then is to understand how historic figures, how peoples were treated during the war in the larger context. And so it's really important then that as comprehensive and as full a story, which isn't always a great story to be told, but it needs to be told. And so we take that very seriously, and we do all that we can to be truth tellers, and to seek to tell nuanced and difficult stories in context.
Well said, and I think that's the big difference, right? The museum, as compared to a statue or war memorials in a town square that may romanticize a certain aspect, the museum is not telling just pretty and romanticized stories of the past, but that whole story in context, warts and all, so that you can understand the complete set of events, historical set of events. Well said. Dr. Naylor, would you tell folks what the website is for the National World War One Museum and Memorial in Kansas City?
Certainly, Jim. TheWorldWar.org is the best is the website, the best place to follow up with us, TheWorldWar.org. And then from there, you'll be able to find our YouTube channel. You'll see our Twitter connections, our Facebook connections, our Instagram as well. We provide lots of content through those platforms as well that is often principally education-focused and easy to follow. TheWorldWar.org is the very best place to begin.
Well, we want to thank you, Dr. Naylor, for taking some time today to inform and educate our...
Okay, that was Dr. Naylor from the World War I Museum talking with my partner, Jim Falsone. We all need to know our history. We've talked about that over and over again today, that if we don't know our history, as he pointed out, it's not that we're bound to repeat it. It's just that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be, we're not going to learn our lessons that maybe we should have. I was, during that interview, I was looking at the article that was sent to me. It's from the Atlantic Magazine, and it talks about the idea of what do we do with these statues? You know, do we keep them out there? Do we take them down? Do we put them in a warehouse? Same with the military bases. Do we just change their name? Do we get rid of Fort Bragg or Fort Rucker or all of those things and rename it for a, I don't know. Fort Rucker is a home of Army Aviation. And so I was thinking, well, you know, you could name it after one of the Medal of Honor recipients that was a pilot. You've got Pat Brady out there. You've got Charlie Kettles. We're all helicopter pilots who received the Medal of Honor, along with some other, you know, a couple of other ones. And maybe you could have, depending on the base, somebody from that particular branch. And maybe, you know, give it a little bit more meaning. Because the article I was reading in the Atlantic had two comments that I thought were really interesting. It is that who built these statues to begin with? And I guess we can go back and say, well, who named these military bases? What was the reason behind this? Did we name the bases because it was kind of a bone or a carrot that we could throw to the South that were still reeling from the Civil War? Was it a statue that was did the government put the statue up, or was it a statue that was built through donations from some family member or some group of people that had a lot of money and said, oh, let's build a statue to General X because we think it's important that he should be in there. I don't know, but I thought that those were kind of interesting. The line was, you know, today people are just, they're arguing over everything. It's that our society is arguing just over everything. And it says, do we get rid of these statues as tantamount to erasing history? Versus those that, say, far from representing history, these monuments idolize the role of those that they depict. So what's the statue designed to do? I was thinking about that. You know, when we think about places like Arlington, or we think of local veterans' memorials, whatever community that you happen to be in, and we've got we've got one here in Ann Arbor to Vietnam veterans, and it's not to the war. You know, it's not trying to glorify war. None of these memorials are trying to glorify war. What we're doing is we're trying to honor the people that paid that ultimate price for all of us. And, you know, we've talked to many Medal of Honor recipients here on the program, and everybody always says, well, you know, these guys are heroes and so forth. And every single one of them I've ever had the privilege of talking to said, we're not the heroes. The heroes are the ones that didn't come home. And this is what those monuments are for. Go look at a monument in your town. Look up the name of the people on that monument, on the wall, whatever it is. How old were they when their life ended? Were they 17, 18, 19, 20? You're not going to see any 70-year-olds up there in most cases. What would have happened to those people's lives if they hadn't paid that price? Can you imagine? Think about their families someday. When you start tearing down a statue that's to a veteran or to a group of veterans or whatever it is out there, when you, for whatever reason, you decide that needs to go, remember that all of those monuments are not glorifying war. They're trying to pay honor to the men and women who had died during that war. The military does not start wars. We are the ones that have to fight them. The politicians start them. Remember that. When you get upset about a conflict, how many people were upset about the Vietnam War? How many? There were people that were upset that we got involved in World War II, for Pete's sake. One of the issues that we have in America, in the United States of America, is that a democracy can be ugly because we have the opportunity to say whatever we want. I don't think everybody realizes that. On both sides, both extremes of the political spectrum, you do not have to agree. You just have to figure out a way that you could live together and come up with a plan that's going to be beneficial for the majority of us here in America. Whether you are born here, whether you're a Native American, whether you came over on a boat from wherever it was, this is where we live. This is our home. And we have to figure out a way that we can take care of our home. That's all we, all of us really want is safety. You want a safe, you know, a roof over your head, an opportunity to get a good job, an opportunity to take care of your family, an opportunity for your children to have a better life. So if we go around tearing stuff down without any forethought or any process or anything along those lines, we're not going to be doing much to keep our society going. And we need somebody at the top of this whole thing that is trying to get us to do that. You know, there was a story the other day, you know, how many of you are familiar with Winston Churchill? You've heard the name, right? Okay, Winston Churchill carried England on his back during World War II. You know how long he lasted as prime minister after the end of World War II? About a nanosecond, they voted him out. And then they went, you know, then people started looking back at the history of Winston Churchill. Well, he was a imperialist. He felt that England should rule the world and so on and so forth. He wasn't a very nice man when you look back at his political views on many things, but look what he did when he had to. When he was called to be the Prime Minister of England, he kept that country going. So we've got to look at these people and what they did. You know, how many of you out there would like somebody to go back and investigate everything you ever said of a political nature? How many of you went from confirmed conservative to liberal? How many of you went from liberal to conservative? How many of you did things that you were not proud of when you were younger? And now suddenly you know it all? I would encourage everybody out there, no matter what your political bent or leaning is to go find out what these other people on the other side are so upset about. Because right now, we're in a desperate situation, and we need to be careful. We need to be careful. We really do need to work together. We can't start pushing people apart. We need to pull them back together again. You just can't do that. I'm going to take a break. Hey, listen, give us a call. It's free. 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. I want you to hear a story about a Medal of Honor recipient. So we'll be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Army Sergeant John Latham, along with two comrades, rescued three soldiers under heavy German machine gun fire. Details after this. Becoming separated from their platoon by a smoke barrage, Sergeant Latham, Sergeant Alan Eggers, and Corporal Thomas O'Shea took cover in a shell hole well within the enemy's lines. Upon hearing a call for help from an American tank that had become disabled 30 yards from them, the three soldiers left their shelter and started toward the tank under heavy fire from German machine guns and trench mortars. In crossing the fire-swept area, O'Shea was mortally wounded, but Latham and Eggers proceeded to the tank, rescued a wounded officer, and assisted two wounded soldiers to cover in a nearby trench. Latham and Eggers then returned to the tank in the face of violent fire, dismounted a Hotchkiss gun, and took it back to where the wounded men were, keeping off the enemy all day by effective use of the gun, and later bringing it with the wounded men back to our lines under cover of darkness. Sergeant Alan Eggers was also awarded the Medal of Honor.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. There are thousands of veterans still living on the streets of our nation. Please support Veterans Matter. Your donation can help house a veteran in minutes and prevent another from losing their home. Donate at veteransmatter.org or text VETS to 41444 to make a donation of any amount. Let's all help Veterans Matter take care of our own. Thank you.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and the idea today was to have you give us a call and let us know how you feel about these monuments and about the name changes for the military bases. You know, I chose that Medal of Honor today because it was kind of interesting. You know, I've been doing a lot of Ancestry.com recently, and my wife's family and my family, you know, came over from, surprisingly, from Sweden and Germany and England and so on and so forth. But John Latham, the guy that we're talking about who received the Medal of Honor during World War One, this is kind of a typical American story. He was born in Windermere, England in 1888. He entered the service for World War One in Rutherford, New Jersey. So think about it, right? This is who we are. This is diversity. This is what happens. People come here looking for the opportunity, and many of them take it. Just look around your neighborhood. If you're not happy with the way that people are doing things, they work so hard. Everybody comes here to have a better life. Nobody comes here to just live off the land. I think that that's something that we are all forgetting so often. Anyway. Try not to get on that soapbox too much right now. But the idea is that here's John Latham, and there are numerous other Medal of Honor recipients that were not even born in America. There are members of people that are entitled to win or to earn the Medal of Honor that never even got above that because of their race. These are the things that we went through. These are the warts that our country has had to go through. You know, my favorite play right now is Hamilton, and I've seen it three or four times, once live and recently when it came out. And you know, here's a great story that talks about the forming of America and so forth, and the life that Hamilton had before he became famous, and the life he almost, you know, that he ended up losing much too soon, but the influence that he had on our history is untold. I mean, our entire banking system was based upon what Hamilton wanted to do. And people are upset because they didn't address certain issues. Well, you know, you've only got so much information. It's just like we were talking about earlier with the teachers. You don't have enough time to cover everything. I think Lin-Manuel wanted to tell the story of this guy, this Hamilton guy, and didn't have the time to include that, you know, what he had done or what Jefferson had done or what Washington had done and all these other people. The other thing is that we have to remember is that they were living 250 years ago, folks. The world has changed all around us. And we have to think about that. When you go starting to tear down a statue, what was the motivation for that statue to be put up? What was the motivation for that memorial to be built? What was the motivation or the history of why that particular base was called that name? It's just like Ed said at the beginning of the program. Emotionally, he feels that it's wrong. But if we go back and we look at the history of that particular person or that particular event, well, that explains it. Have you ever been to Gettysburg? Anybody out there? If you've been to the battlefield in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, there are statues that were built by the families of some of the men that died there. There were statues that were built by the hometown of one of the men who died there. They're all over the place. Are you going to go out to some place like that and just say, oh, this guy was bad and this guy was good? They died. This is what they did. They paid that ultimate sacrifice for what they believed in. Now, whether you believe in what the Confederates believe in or the Union believed in, that's kind of irrelevant when it comes down to what these men were willing to die for. They thought that it was important that they fight for whatever they thought was right. Now, I don't want us to get into a situation where we have to start thinking about a civil war, folks. So don't do that. That article that I mentioned earlier on had a pretty good suggestion. It's in Atlantic Magazine, and it talks about, well, maybe we should revisit some of these statues and memorials every 50 years or so and say, okay, is this still relevant to who we are? Because most statues that are built are not, as I mentioned earlier on, are not built by a government agency. They are built through donations. They are built by families. They are built by people who want to honor somebody for one reason or another. Maybe we should have a community vote. I mean, we vote on our taxes. We vote on all this other stuff. Maybe we should vote on these memorials that are being built. The Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. took almost 20 years for it to get built. World War II Memorial took almost 50 years to get built because the government doesn't pay for those. The Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, all of those were not built by the government. They were built by us. The people of the United States felt that we needed to build a memorial to these people and to these ideas and to these ideals. So we still are in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And it's up to us to keep it. As Benjamin Franklin said, okay, folks, now you've got your democracy. It's up to you to keep it. And that's what we've got to do. I encourage all of our listeners to go out, find out what these people on the other side are so upset about. Try not to be as emotional about it as some of us get. These people are that way. Those people are that way. Try not to stereotype. I was an interview that I listened to the other day. We're coming up to the end of the program. I know, Derek. To Kill a Mockingbird, everyone, not everyone, but many, many people feel it's one of the greatest American novels out there. Atticus Finch, who is the lawyer and the protagonist in the book, says you can't judge other people until you've climbed into their skin and walked around in it for a while. Most of us don't know what it's – we don't have a clue what it's like to be of another race. We don't have a clue what it's like to be of another sex. We don't have a clue about what it's like to be young anymore, it seems. Think about what you were like when you were 19. If you were a part of the generation from the 60s, how many marches did you go on, one side or the other? Didn't you want to change the world? Don't we all want to change the world for the better? I think it's important. I think it's something that we need to consider, and I'm calling upon all of you to make a little extra effort, just a little understanding, just a little empathy, I think will really help us as a country when we go on. Okay, we got 2 minutes left, so I want to make sure I want to thank our sponsors again. And I want to thank all of you that are listening. I wish more of you had called in. We'll try this again next week. Actually, we're going to be doing a benefits program. So we need your questions on not only your disability benefits, but maybe questions or comments about what's going on at your local Veterans Administration hospital. So please try to do that. So, all right, here we go. So we want to thank Legal Help for Veterans, of course, major sponsor. We want to thank the U.S. Wings. We want to thank the National Veterans Business Development Council, the NVBDC, for helping all of these veteran businesses to get off the ground and get their certification. And we want to thank the Eisenhower Center for providing us with the care that many, many people need. Thereafter, the IMPACT program provides rehab for veterans, first responders, and professional athletes. If you want to help out Veterans Radio, we can always use your financial support. We can always use your support as far as stories are concerned and where we can find articles and things. What is it that you want us to talk about? This is your program. Veterans Radio is the voice of America's veterans, and that's what we want to do for you. So this is Dale Thronberry for Veterans Radio. We're going to be signing off. Send us your comments. What do you want us to do on our program? If you like it, if you don't like it, do that. Till next week, you are dismissed.